Yes, the road trip. You might remember being bundled in the car by mum and dad at the crack of dawn, or fighting with your siblings over who had the most room in the back seat. Just about everybody who grew up between the 40s and the 70s will have been on one. Flying was too expensive, and cars were affordable. And for most of that time, actually, petrol was cheap. Now, I did say at the top of the show we wanted to hear from you on this, but many of you have already rung in. So if you want to say something, please go to the listener line on 02 833 1430. Everybody Loves a Road Trip is an exhibition at the Bayleu Library at the University of Melbourne, and the curator of the exhibition, Melinda Barry, joins me now. Hello, Melinda.
Hi, how are you, Richard?
I'm really well. There seems to be a real nostalgia for the road trip. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it is because it harks back to a time when, you know, life was just that little bit simpler, and, you know, places were accessible. And yeah, no, I think nostalgia brings out something in all of us. Mm. I mean, there were swap card albums that were evocative to people. We've got Monica's passports that sort of bring back memories for Monica and others from that period. No, I think there's a lot of nostalgia around a road trip, and perhaps just it's the simpler things, you know. Perhaps it's just something lost. Maybe that's why we sort of harken back to.
Well, I'll bring in Monica Surrett in a moment. She's also a curator at the University of Melbourne's Granger Museum and has made a contribution, which we'll get to in a moment. But just while I've still got you, Melinda, how important was the motor car after the war? How was it seen?
Well, the motor car was seen as an object of prosperity, basically. Along with the refrigerator and a number of consumer items. It was an item that was accessible. It meant once you owned a motor vehicle that you had autonomy. You weren't reliant on train timetables anymore. You could go where you wanted when you wanted. And it was an access. Rationing had just finished, and you know, petrol was available in quantities and at a fairly affordable rate for most people.
We didn't really think about how much it cost until the first oil shock, did we?
No, not until the 1970s, really.
You have some amazing primary sources in your exhibition, which you source from Shell and the RACV Museum. One of them is the Shell Outback Road Map. Now, there's quite a story behind that, isn't there?
Ah, yes, the Shell Outback Roadmap. Which particular roadmap are you talking about?
Well, isn't this the one where two women created the map?
Ah, yes, the blueprint maps. That's the story of Kathleen Howell and Jean Robertson from the 1920s. That was the period when basically motor vehicle driving was really only for the wealthy or the adventurers. And they were sponsored, they had their petrol paid for them or their oil paid for by Shell along the way. And in return, what these women did was produce a route map for Shell, and they produced a couple of them. There was the trip from Melbourne to Darwin, and then there was their trip from Perth to Port Augusta.
They set a new record, didn't they? Across the Nullarbor, I think.
It was amazing, you know, for that period in time. It only took them, I think it was 2 or 3 days. It was an amazing feat. And they did their own repairs too. I mean, there's a photograph of them actually pulling their, or wheeling their car out of a muddy ditch using very basic implements.
Now, you've also got a patrolman's phone from the RACV. How did that work?
Oh, the patrolman's phone. It was a wireless phone. I mean, I don't know. I don't know about you, but I wasn't aware that wireless technology was around in the 1950s.
No.
It was bolted into the dashboard of the panel van. And previously, RACV patrolmen had carried little bags of pennies around with them, and they used to call at head office from a public phone. But with the introduction of these patrolman phone, they could actually do it from their van on the go. Mind you, the phone was only connected to RACV head office, so they couldn't exactly call home or do anything else with their phone, you know. But I thought that was an amazing innovation at the time, 1952.
Yeah, mate. And you've already mentioned the idea of breaking down, and certainly no road trip story really seems to be complete without talking about breaking down.
No road trip is complete.
Or getting lost. And speaking of technology, you mentioned the patrolman's phone from 1952, but the getting lost part is changing with the development of technology, GPS systems. mean that you don't have to get lost. And I wonder if that makes us, in a way, less adventurous.
Well, I used a GPS to get to the studios this morning, I must admit. Well, I think a little bit. There is that element of adventure, the serendipitous find. Maybe we're not doing that as much as we used to. But then again, GPSs can fail too. You can type in the wrong address and end up at the wrong place, you know, so they're not foolproof either. But it is, it sort of is a sign that we are trying to protect ourselves more than we used to and, you know, have the seamless trip, you know, because that's the other element that I've sort of noticed as well as I've been putting this exhibition together is that, you know, when we had the road trip, we had a bit more of, and days beforehand, we had more of a sense of how fast we were going and travelling to a place, whereas, you know, now we're more likely to step onto a plane and there's a sort of disconnect between the actual distance travelled and the actual getting there, you know.
On Life Matters today, we're talking about the road trip, and my guest is Melinda Barry, who's the curator of Everybody Loves a Road Trip, which is an exhibition at the University of Melbourne. I want to bring in Monica Siret, also a curator at Melbourne Uni. She's at the Granger Museum. Welcome to Life Matters, Monica.
Thanks.
Now, you've donated a piece of your own road trip memorabilia to the exhibition, haven't you?
That's right. It's a shell passport when I was
I remember
around
those.
60. Yes. Oh, I loved mine. Obviously, I've still got it. It's pretty tatty. But, 1973, my parents took myself and my brother and sisters across the Nullarbor from Canberra to Perth and back again so we could have Christmas with my grandparents. And the shell passport was basically the size of a regular passport with you put your information in the front and then it had room for stamps that you got from the service stations. And up the back it had games to play and dot to dot and a little space to put the things you'd seen that, you know, you wanted to remember. And I found it incredibly exciting as a child.
I remember this because in my memory, and memory's an unreliable guide, but I got one, but I don't think I was always able to persuade my parents to stop at the right petrol station. Good marketing, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. There's no way my father could stop anywhere else. We wouldn't allow it.
So you were applying pressure from the back seat.
Oh, definitely. I remember just, I think in the catalogue I write about, it was hard to restrain myself from jumping out of the car. I loved getting them. And they were, you know, I mean, politically incorrect now, but, you know, they were trying to illustrate the region at times so there'd be a stamp of, you know, a sheep or, you know, a camel or emu or an Aboriginal with a spear, you know, things that are definitely 70s, you know, they don't do that now. But for us it was very exotic. I mean, we felt like going from Canberra suburbs into the Nullarbor, it was like going to a foreign country. It really did feel like that for us.
Well, two things occur there. One is it's a long way from Canberra to Perth. These days you see kids watching DVDs in the back seat.
That's right, yeah.
You didn't get to do that. I didn't either. No. What are your memories of the Australian landscape?
Well, it was almost a shock to us, I think, coming from Canberra. I mean, going across the Nullarbor, just the heat because we didn't have air conditioning and vinyl seats. Oh. So really have those memories of being hot.
You leave a layer of skin on the seat if you're careful, don't you?
Yeah, and just how tired you got in that heat. But then going across, you know, such a straight line with just this expanse of countryside on each side of you and then slowly rising and the temperature would ease a little and you'd get a bit of relief. Those sorts of sensations I remember really well. And also we went twice, two trips across another time when I was 9, and seeing going through Aboriginal reserves and seeing the some people in the landscape, like I think collecting food or something. But that definitely was an eye-opener for me that there was Australian population that were comfortable in that environment and that was an environment that was really alien to me.
All right.
So really strong memories.
That's Monica Siret, who's the curator of the Granger Museum at the University of Melbourne and contributor to this Everybody Loves a Road Trip exhibition, which is on at the university in the Bailieu Library. I beg your pardon. We've got some callers. I want to take one or two on this. Anne from Bellingen. Hello.
Hello, Richard.
What are your memories?
Well, as I grew up in Sydney and my father used to love to throw the three kids, the dog and the cat, in the back of the car and drive straight through to Maroochydore.
Gee, that's a fair way.
a long way. So,
how long did that take?
Well, from memory, we used to leave Sydney about 2 a.m. and I guess the theory was if you put the kids in the car halfway through the night, they'd sleep.
Yeah.
And
did you?
Yeah, we did, because I'd actually just jolted a memory with, like, looking out of the window, and these days the kids are watching DVDs. My father, I remember my father waking us up, and pre-dawn, it was just dawn, and a huge grey, I'm sure it was a big old male kangaroo, was racing the car.
Yeah.
Alongside the Pacific, you know, along the Pacific Highway for, you know, about a minute or so, and we're doing about 80 miles an hour.
I don't remember being game enough to go to sleep. Because I have to say, Anne, if we I'm one of five, and if we stop somewhere and you're asleep, you missed out on whatever might be going in terms of, you know, they stop for petrol, but you can always lobby at that point for something.
Oh, that was, I have a clear memory of waking up and we were just leaving a petrol station and my brothers had just been given a snowball. Do you remember the snowball?
I do. Oh.
And
I'd imagine you'd protest at that point.
Well, it was very important. You knew you'd missed out on a treat, even if it'd been eaten. And I remember my mother had bought one for me for when I woke up. So that was, you know, that was definitely critical.
What about other food? Because, I mean, there weren't the number of sheer, you know, fast food palaces that there are now. Basically, if you wanted to eat something, you either got off the road or we always did this, had a picnic.
Well, my father, because we would leave in the middle of the night and drive straight through to Maroochydore, we'd be having breakfast somewhere on the road, and he loved to have barbecue breakfasts. So my poor mother, not only did she have 3 weeks of tin groceries from the supermarkets in Sydney because they were much cheaper than where we were going in Queensland, and three kids and the dog and the cat, we'd stop for a barbecue breakfast, and all the makings would come out of the boot of the car. The sausages, the bacon, the tomatoes. My father would build a fire in one of those, usually at the roadside stops, there'd be a little tiny barbecue with a metal plate, and we'd be having a barbecue, and my father just loved it, and the kids loved it, but I don't know if my mother loved it.
No, no. And thank you very much for that. I'm going to squeeze in one more. Sally, from Canberra, how are you going?
Good, thanks.
Now, what are your memories of road trips?
Well, I grew up in Hobart. I'm a 64 baby, so my memories are early 70s and onwards. And we had finite distances, I guess, that we could go. We used to go up to Hawley Beach often on the north coast of
Tasmania.
That's near
Devonport, isn't it?
That's right. I guess I remember wonderful holidays, but it was the drama of the trip that sticks in my memory more than anything. The preparation, because we had a property and animals to look after, so somebody had to come in and look after the place if we were to go away. Mum used to have to mastermind the whole thing. My dad was a bit of a mad academic, a very clever man, but it was Mum that did the masterminding, and the packing of the Holden, oh my heavens, you know, the boot was full of I don't know what, it wasn't barbecue stuff, but it was definitely a picnic on top of all the stuff that we took with us. Mum used to take out the back seat of the car, there was space underneath the seat to fill.
Just a little bit you could get
yeah.
in.
Yeah, and then we'd have to jump up and down on the seat to get the seat back in. Then she'd put all the polyester sleeping bags on top of the seat, and we had to sit on those. There was four of us, and we'd, you know.
You all end up about 6 inches higher.
Yeah, you were far too high. You didn't have seat belts on. You slipped and you stuck, and they wriggled and jiggled, and so you'd have fights about that. You'd got bags underneath your feet, so you know, you've got your feet under your knees under your chin. Fights about the window seats.
My
two children fight about who can sit in the middle, but we fought about those window seats.
I hear you. I've got two kids. I'm one of five. They fight about things, and I'm thinking, you don't even know you're born.
You have no idea, children. The dog had to fit in the back as well. Yeah, the dog as
four kids and a dog.
Yeah. Now, my mother was a pretty bad traveller, and the stress of you know, getting on the road, often as not she had a migraine. The dog would regularly vomit.
Oh, God.
And I have memories of being stripped down to my undies, beautiful purple flowery undies, somewhere alongside the highway, you know, with dog vomit everywhere, while Mum tried to deal with that. And the road, I mean, it was called the Midlands Highway to go up the centre of Tasmania, but it wasn't really much of a highway, I guess. You know, it was the two lanes, one on each side, and windy, windy, windy. And I, you know,
Sally, you're making me feel funny. Yeah.
As an adult, it's just an insignificant 2 hours up north, but in those days, it'd take hours. You get stuck behind trucks. And,
oh, God. We have to leave it there. Thank you for that, Sally.
No worries.
It reminds me of our own trips, and one of my sisters, I won't mention her name, but it begins with an L. She seemingly got car sick every, I don't know, 5 or 6K. It did tend to slow us down a bit. We've been talking about the road trip, and my guests have been, we've had the callers, and also Melinda Barrett and Monica Surrett, curators at the University of Melbourne, of what sounds like a fantastic, fantastic exhibition. Everybody loves a road trip. This is Life Matters, and you're listening to ABC Radio National with me, Richard Aidey.